play the theme song now a little bit before, so that way I can like hear it come in, and it's really fun to like jam out. I'm sorry you didn't get to experience that with me.
Aw, one of the bummers of not recording together. I don't get to like get in the mood.
Yeah, I get a little intro song and you just have silence and me dancing.
Actually, this time I had a bit of a metronome because when I was recording, I forgot to turn it off first on GarageBand. So don't worry, I got some rhythm in there, just like really obnoxious, you know, regular beats.
Ah, good, good. Well, guys, welcome back to the Drunk Poet Society. My name is Taylor.
My name is Felice. Welcome back, guys.
And we are still just reading a whole lot of books here in self-isolation.
I just looked, and on my Goodreads goal for the year, I am 10 books ahead.
Nice. I kind of freaked me out when it started doing that, because I don't think last year it said, like, you're one book behind, or you're two books ahead, or I don't think that was part of the app last year. So then this year when I logged on, for a while, I was always one book ahead. I was like, I'm going to crush this goal. And then I jumped, like, three books ahead, and then I actually stopped reading for a bit because, I don't know, I don't remember if it was, like, during the whole transition. I was just too busy with things. And then I was, like, one book behind, and I got all freaked out. I was like, no, my lead.
I mean, it doesn't hurt that I think two of the books that I've read were YA books that I took from my classroom, but that doesn't make them less good. I loved them so much. Plus, I was listening to books while I was, like, sitting around and doing puzzles. Which ended up, I guess, being a solitary activity for me. Like, when my husband was at work, that's when I would go and, like, get my puzzle in going. And I would just, like, stick on my headphones and listen to a book and be like, oh, it's been 4 hours. Wow. Okay. All right.
No, I did that, too, when we were working on the last puzzle, which took us far too long. And the first puzzle we did, we finished in a day. We were, like, you know, it was day two of self-isolation. You're like, oh, we're just going to smash through all. Yeah, exactly. Like, it was kind of that day where everyone was still kind of joking and in good spirits and stuff. Yeah. And we're like, yeah, we're going to just smash out this puzzle. And we did, and it was great. And then we started a second one. That one took us like 5 days. We're like, that's okay. This next one's going to be great. And this one took us weeks because it was not only hard, but we just like started losing motivation. But that's what I would do too. I would listen to
audiobooks. I'm in class on Zoom for grad school once a week for 6 hours. I'm on Zoom. And so for my second class, I turned off my camera this week. Like, normally, like, my professor is very insistent. Like, come on, everybody, be present. Turn your cameras on. And I was like, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. And I just listened to his lecture, and I worked on this 1,000-piece puzzle that was on my kitchen table the whole time. And it made me feel so much better about having to sit there for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm the same. The first day we transitioned over to Zoom classes, everyone had their cameras on, but by the second week, everyone had their cameras off. It was just...
My even students the teachers are doing the same off. Thing. My kids are doing exactly that. Like, the first week, even in the middle of, like, a math lesson, they kept, like, turning on their cameras and being little rascals, and it was irritating. And now, like, if you've ever done this in a Zoom meeting, you guys, the host can send people into breakout rooms for, like, little mini Zooms, and the host can visit those rooms. So I did that. I was like, okay, we're all going to talk about this science project we're working on. I want you to share what medium you decided to use and like why you chose that. And I'm visiting these Zooms and all their cameras are off. And for the most part, like maybe one kid is talking in each of them. What? If I had done this 3 weeks ago, you would have been off topic and you just would have been chit-chatting or showing people your dogs. So I don't know. It's not a novelty anymore. Everybody's over it. Yeah. My students just want to go back to school.
I think we're all in that boat.
But we have books. We have
We have books. We have books and we have alcohol, and that is helping.
Everybody copes in different ways.
And you know how we cope here. We like to. We like a little bit of escapism into our stories and a little bit of vino to accompany them.
I started a book thinking that it was going to be a romance novel. I downloaded it. I was like, oh, okay, this is the newest Nora Roberts series. Like, Nora Roberts, she writes romance novels. This is fine. So I'm settling in at night, and I'm, like, getting into bed. And I read the first chapter, and I had to return it to the library. I was like,
oh, no.
Absolutely not, because I didn't read the synopsis. I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm just going to read it. This book, in the first 10 pages, 2 billion people die from a global pandemic? And I was like, no, I can't read this. And then I read the synopsis afterward, and it was like, this group of people who are suddenly developing these magical powers are like fighting bad guys. And I was like, there isn't even a romance element. This is not escapism. This is terrifying. I can't read it. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, for that reason, that's why I kept saying, like, the next book we read has to be, like, just something fun, nice romance, because we had Ready Player One, which was great. It was a fun escape, but it, like I said, a number of times, it also, it touched on a worldwide virus, and the whole thing is about people just living, like, in escapism. And now we have this week's book, which is about an agoraphobe, and...
an alcoholic agoraphobe.
So, you know... I guess that's a good segue into the book of this podcast is The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn. And if I say A.J. Flynn, I don't know why that stuck in my head, but every time I've told someone to read this book, I've always said A.J. Flynn, and I apologize for it. It's not. It's Finn.
I mean, Gillian Flynn writes similar books.
Yeah.
Isn't that her last name is Flynn?
Flynn. Gillian.
Yeah? Finn. For Sharp Objects?
Yeah,
that's why. Similar ideas. And actually, so we are reading Woman in the Window. I just want to let you know before we start discussing, I wonder if my husband's getting home. My cat just ran across the house. Oh my God. I just watched the trailer for the movie.
Oh yeah.
Of this book that's supposed to be out in the middle of May. And I was like, I figured this was the kind of book that would be made into a really, really great movie. But we also read Sharp Objects. I don't know if you saw the miniseries. I did on HBO. But Amy Adams plays I don't remember her name. It was like Catherine or something like that. I don't remember. But an alcoholic, unreliable narrator, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we get her again in Woman in the Window because she is playing Anna.
Really?
Anna Fox. Yeah, the cast looks awesome. So after this, you should definitely like pick it up and look at the trailer because the cast is amazing. Gary Oldman is in it. It looks super cool. Julianne Moore plays one of the Jane Russells. So definitely check it out. You can describe your drink that you're pairing, and then I will tell you what I am pairing.
Yes. Well, hopefully if you're listening to this podcast, you've read the book or know of the story and all that stuff. A recurring theme I'd like to say in this book is a lot of Merlot, like just a whole lot of Merlot. And I personally don't typically drink Merlot, so I have a lot of red wine in the house, but not a single bottle of Merlot did I have. So on my, I guess, fortnightly grocery shop, I picked up one bottle of Merlot from Trader Joe's. Shout out to Purple Moon, all the moon wines from Trader Joe's, which was one of the cheapest ones I could find.
I wonder if, like, you can find, like, a cheap cab. Not that I want to really drink a very, very cheap cab. Like, not unless it's good. I guess if you find a good one, you find a good one. But it is kind of harder to find a cheap Merlot, and I don't know why. I'm with you. It's never my first choice. I feel like if I was at someone's house and they're like, oh, I have this bottle of red open. Do you want some? It's a Merlot. I don't think I would be like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'd probably be like, okay, I'll take a little bit, but it's never going to be my choice. And I don't know why. I don't know if Paul Giamatti in that stupid movie, brainwashed me into thinking that Merlot was bad, but...
I don't know. You know what? It's funny. I think when I first moved to Australia and I was young and I was like, ooh, I'm going to be a wine drinker now. It was maybe the first red wine I was actually introduced to. So I drank Merlot for a while because I think when you don't know anything about wine and you're introduced to something, you're like, well, at least I don't hate this. I'll just keep drinking it. So that's what I did is I drank a lot of Merlot and then I discovered like Cabs and Syrahs and Tempranillos. And I was like, oh, wait, I was sleeping on all these.
Yeah, I was wrong. I'm drinking a Blackstone, which I think is a pretty common label that you can get all over the place. It's pretty widely distributed. I got it at Costco because my husband said, hey, can you grab a bottle of Merlot? First of all, don't know where that came from. Don't think I've ever heard him say that he liked Merlot, but whatever. I was like, fine. I found it at Costco for $3.99 a bottle. So I was like, yeah, okay. Maybe I just won't tell him it's a $4 bottle of wine. It's fine. So here's my Merlot, your Merlot. Cheers.
Clink.
Virtual cheers. Clink.
You know, not bad.
No, I drink this at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
And guess what? How did you know it was 3 o'clock on a Saturday? You know what? I'm not picky at this point in my life. At this point in self-isolation, I'm not going to be a snob.
I'm happy that mine is, I had enough forethought to put it in the wine fridge. Mm. So it's like just that much colder than the room. Cause it's probably about, I don't know, like 75 degrees in here. Cause it's oh my God, it's 90 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's hot.
LA is really hot right now, y'all.
It went from winter weather to summer pretty quick.
Yeah, and I hope that it just goes back just a little bit. Like, high of 80 sounds great until June. Like, come on.
I think it's supposed to. I think houses. Yeah, I think the wind and everything, we just got a weird hot flash, and mm-hmm. we're supposed to be back to kind of more regular spring-type weather. But it would be
great if the heat kind of kills off,
that'd be cool.
Bad stuff. At least for a while, but we don't have to talk about our COVID theories or ideas.
That's not what we're here for.
I'm also really happy. I'm drinking my wine out of my "It's Not Drinking Alone If You Have a Boat" glass that I got for Christmas. That's
a great
wine glass. So shout out to my friend Zachary. We've talked about him a bit.
Shout out to Zachary just a lot of things. He's a great person.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. All right, so besides the trailer, I guess we should start with a synopsis. So, we already said that our main character, as you guys know, because obviously you read it if you're doing this, it's available on all platforms, by the way. I didn't have to wait. It was available right away on Libby. So at least my library had a bunch of copies.
Yeah, and I'll check in a second. I'm going to check something.
Yeah, I think I read it and I listened to it. I did both, which was interesting.
I was just going to say it's also available on Hoopla as an audiobook.
Oh, as an audiobook, it's on Hoopla? Oh,
yeah.
Hoopla. I haven't got to talk about that in a while. I love Hoopla. But essentially, our main character, Dr. Anna Fox, we find out that very early on that she is an agoraphobe. She is no longer living with her husband and daughter because of some incident that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. She's very active in an online community, almost like in a therapist capacity. Her little handle is "The Doctor Is In." I kind of wish I had physically read those parts because mm-hmm. it's kind of like the Mindy Kaling book. I think this was a complaint of mine during that when you're reading all of those email exchanges and all of the texts, it's so much faster to actually read it because you don't need to know the screen name every time. You can just like glance through it, so it takes longer if you're listening. But she spends all of her time watching her neighbors like a creeper, like Rear Window style.
Yeah, it's very very, and I'm gonna paint a number of similarities between this and The Girl on the Train.
We read that too.
Yeah, it was kind of at first, I'm not going to say boring. That's not the right word. It just felt predictable. Like, I've heard this story, except she was on a train, not behind her window. You know,
it wasn't super original and compelling.
Yeah. It changed for me, and I thoroughly enjoyed mm-hmm. the read. But on the onset of it all, we know that something's happened in this woman's past, and there's been some kind of, like, romantic upset. We don't really know what it is in the beginning. That kind of is similar to The Girl on the Train. They're both alcoholics, unreliable narrators. They're both spying on people. They both, you know, witness something that is wrong. And then it becomes like a whodunit type of thing. And then, once the crime had been committed, then I was like, okay, I'm in. I need to know everything about these people. But up until that point, I was a bit like, all right, I've heard this story before, you know? So it took a little longer for me to really jump on board, and then I was in for the rest of it.
Yeah, and it didn't feel derivative at all at the beginning. It was just kind of those, because I read Sharp Objects, because mm-hmm. I read Girl on the Train, because, you know, I almost keep calling this book The Girl in the Window. Like, no, she's mm-hmm. a woman now. She's a girl now.
She's not the girl anymore. She moved on from her canned gin and tonics, and now she's drinking Merlot, so.
Yeah, right, exactly. Just like a Britney Spears song. But because of that, you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of getting slightly tropey that we mm-hmm. have unreliable alcoholic narrator who's got like glimpses into something that happened, some kind of event, and you're hearing everything from their perspective. So you don't really know what's going on with literally anybody else. It's all first person. Although this one wasn't actually, was it first person or was it? It was a first person book, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's lots of eyes and stuff. Yeah. So that kind of makes it interesting. You only get that perspective, but it makes you constantly guess about what's going to happen.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have, this woman who seems fairly competent in most aspects mm-hmm. of her life. She, even the way she speaks on the Agora, which is like her online portal, you know, she's very knowledgeable. People seek advice from her. I think there's a bit of like community and camaraderie in the sense that they know she is a, you know, clinical like psychologist or psychiatrist. I don't remember which one.
I think she's a psychiatrist. Not that it matters.
But like people, you know, trust her. And but at the same time, she's still has, you know, this problem that she's dealing with is being unable mm-hmm. to leave the house. And she's supposedly working with a psychiatrist on that. She's also, for being a doctor, and of course, it's one of those things that, you know, do as I say, not as I do. She's on a lot of medication and not taking them regularly, and she's taking them with alcohol, and she might be double dosing or underdosing, and she doesn't really remember, and she's in this constant state of just, I think, trying to escape it all, you know, escape life, escape her fears, escape whatever this trauma is that happened to her in the past, which we don't find out for quite a while. But then we get the grandma character pop up on the Agora.
Were you suspicious of that at all?
Oh, the whole time. Like, the second she popped up, I was like, that's not mm-hmm. that's not grandma. Mm-hmm. Like,
No. And the audiobook, like, granny, grandma, whatever her name was, there was like, a nice little sweet voice that they did for it. And I was like, I still can't believe it with with the little voice.
Yeah. And so you... like, she has that aspect of her life, and basically she gets her new neighbors across the street, which you can see into their window. And now this is where I'm a little fuzzy. So how does she meet the one that she thinks is the wife?
It's Halloween, and her house is getting egged, and she goes outside to like yell at the kids, like, "Hey, you little scamps! Stop doing that," or, you know, whatever she's going to say to them, and kind of like loses consciousness. And then I'm going to put it in quote, Jane Russell comes over and helps her. Don't kick me. Sorry, I just got beaten by a cat. Comes over, helps her inside, and then stays and chats. And then I think the second time when she's like, is when she comes over and they're drinking and she paints the picture and stuff. But ultimately sees that she passes out and her front gate is like leaving her house, mm-hmm. depending on where you guys are. I guess this is one of those ones. We're probably going to spoil it the whole time. So if you haven't read it, come back. Don't stay now.
This is one of the twisty ones that we're going to say something immediately and it's going to spoil part of it. So just read the book, come back and listen.
Yeah, there are two, like, I'm going to say, actually, there are probably like three twists in this book that would be ruined for you if we mentioned any of them, and it would bum you out. So please just leave. Come back after you read it. Again, it's on Hoopla and Libby and wherever books are sold. But yeah, no. So she's leaving the house, the brownstone across the park, and sees that Anna has like lost consciousness or whatever and helps her inside. And Anna still has like all of these bottles on the table and her pills all over the place and an old movie playing because she's obsessed with old black and white movies.
Yeah. And the other, so that's how she meets Jane Russell, right?
That's how she meets Jane Russell.
The quote unquote Jane Russell.
Yes, we're going to put her in quotes.
And we find out that, well, first we also have the relationship with the tenant. The mm-hmm. apparently very David. Hot tenant, which was, yeah, David, which, I don't know how I feel about that whole relationship throughout the book. Like, it was mm-hmm. just a bit, I mean, I know it's supposed to be awkward, but I don't know.
Anna's just so awkward.
Yeah.
That I couldn't even gauge whether or not other people were a cause of that. Like, I couldn't tell if David was also awkward or if it was just, like, Anna being weird all the time.
And because it's coming from her perspective, because he's kind of described it being like as being like too cool or aloof or like just not very wordy. But I almost wonder if he's just a really awkward dude too, and her perception of herself is that she's more awkward.
Maybe.
I don't know. But that was an interesting relationship as that unfolded. But there's a lot of comments, you know, even from Jane Russell, like, oh, who's that? Like, you know, that hunk or whatever she says.
Who's that hottie? And, of course, Anna's like, oh, my God, you're married. How could you do that? Yeah. So our I don't, maybe I've had too much Merlot. The details are a little fuzzy on whether or not she meets Anna, not Anna, whether or not she meets Jane Russell first or the son. She meet the son first? He brings over a candle, or is that after she's already met Jane? Ethan. Ethan's the kid. Did Ethan bring over a candle saying, like, hey, my mom asked me to bring this to you? Did that happen before or after she actually met Jane?
I don't remember. I can't remember what order that came in.
Yeah, I don't remember either. I guess it doesn't really matter. But I'm just trying to, like,
but basically what this plot is establishing order. That she meets the person she believes to be Jane Russell. The son, Ethan, comes over and brings a gift from the mother, the Jane Russell that we don't really know is whatever, but she assumes is the Jane Russell she met on Halloween. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, did she hear the scream first?
Before she knows her?
When does she hear the scream?
That's after she already knows Ethan.
Yeah. But that's before the actual, like, big plot point takes place? Is that right? She hears the scream. David, her tenant, was doing a job over at the Russell house, hired by the husband.
Yes.
And then as he's walking back, Anna hears a scream and asks David, did you hear that scream? He's like, haha, no, I had my earbuds and couldn't hear a thing. And
but then next time she asked him, he was like, oh, no, I wasn't there. Like, I was getting a coffee. So then you're suspecting this neighbor person.
Yeah, so he was kind of sus in the book. You know, I didn't really know what was going on. He was a suspect in all of this for a while. And then she witnesses a murder. Essentially, she looks through her Nikon, I believe. It's the camera that
she definitely name drops Nikon a lot, yeah.
Yeah. And she's looking through, which is very weird that she uses like a telescope. And she sees the quote-unquote Jane Russell and the sharp she sees some kind of sharp object and get stabbed into her, and then like her kind of like, I imagine it the way it was described was like, you know, her hand hits the window and then like kind of she like falls down the window and there's like a bloody stain or something. Like, it was very cinematic in my head, so that's what I'm envisioning.
Me too. They better do that in the movie. So she is freaking out and finally is like, oh my God, I need to leave my house. I'm gonna call the police, blah blah blah. So she calls the police. She tries running across the park and, like, gets stopped halfway and wakes up in the hospital and is tripping. So that's how she's kind of introduced to this police officer, who is another kind of integral part in the book. And the whole time we're getting, like, little snippets of her past through her talking to her therapist and her talking to Granny Lizzie. So she is kind of, Granny Lizzie is like saying all of these things to make Anna feel, well, not necessarily, we don't know that they're too, like, to butter her up or make her feel comfortable, but she's starting to feel very comfortable and is sharing information that she doesn't normally share with people on the, what do we call it? It's not aggro.
The agora?
The agora. And she says, she ends up telling her what we have been dying to know this entire time, which was like, what was the falling out with your husband and your daughter? And my question to you is, because I wrote down a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
We already did the spoiler thing. Okay. Did you know, or did you suspect until, I'm going to say maybe until she was describing the car accident and all of that, did you suspect that the husband and daughter were dead?
So my journey was, I immediately, like in the book, when I found out she was quote unquote separated from her husband, that I was like, oh, they're dead. But then I kind of did a 180 and said,
because of like the phone calls or something?
Yeah, I think it was the phone calls where I was like, okay, well now this put it back into like a real perspective. I don't like, you know, but at the same time, it was kind of a question, but I think I was pretty convinced that they were then alive because of the phone calls. And then as soon as they were talking about, and this was before we even described the car accident, when she was saying that it was, she was, I think it was her therapist she was talking to, and she was like, it was, you know, my fault. I was the one who wanted to take the vacation. I was the one who wanted to go on this trip, and it was, you know, windy, and it was winter, and it was dumb. And then I flipped back and I was like, oh no, mm-hmm. they're dead. She's just like hallucinating or something. So I think it was closer to when she started talking to Granny Lizzie about the actual events. So it was like, you know how she told Granny Lizzie the story in two chunks? It was like the first chunk was
leading, and then Grandma Lizzie was like pieced out and was
So I think that first chunk was when I was convinced. I was like, no, they're dead in this story, you know? I didn't need to hear the car accident to know that. But what about you? When did it hit for you?
I think it was almost as soon as they flashback. So because it was like, okay, what's the purpose of this? There's got to be a reason why we're going to this event. And I think that a lot of the reason that I had a different, that I probably didn't suspect it sooner, is because, again, I was using the audiobook for so much of it, that for all of those conversations, when it was the daughter speaking, it was a daughter voice. When the dad was speaking, it was, you know, an adult man, male kind of voice. And I was like, oh, okay. Which kind of helped convince me a little bit more from the beginning that, like, oh, okay, so she's talking on the phone. It's Halloween. She wants to know about her daughter's costume. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a normal thing if you're separated. But, like, what happened? Why don't you talk at all? That's very bizarre. So I felt dumb that I didn't realize it. And I text my friend, who was the one that told me to read this book. And he was like, I have no idea where you are in the book. I can confirm nor deny anything that you're saying because it is so fragmented like that. You don't really know kind of where you are in that.
Was that kind of the first twist that happened? Like the first, I was trying to remember, because like you said, there's like three of
them. I think the first major twist is trying to figure out who Anna saw, because we found out that the woman that she thought was Jane Russell, Ethan's mother,
is not Jane Russell. That's right.
Not Jane Russell. So the whole time she's like, okay, but who just got murdered? Because I saw her. She was in my living room. She painted this picture. We drank together. Who was here? I think you're Jane Russell.
I think the funniest part, though, is she's like, this painting is obviously proof that I saw Jane Russell. Anyone could paint that and put any kind of signature. I was like, you don't have a photo. You don't have anything. She's like, this is pure evidence.
This is evidence. No, David, he knew where to put the X-Acto knife. Like, oh my God, girl, you be crazy. But that's the first one. The first one is that, ooh, who is this person? Because this is actually Ethan's mother. Ooh, interesting. Okay. Second one would be her husband and her daughter are dead.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I liked how the book read. I think in terms of its actually writing, it was really good. I'm trying to make sure I say this correctly. Because once it's discovered that they are actually dead and I guess that makes sense. Never mind. I was going to say, you know, once we as the audience discover that her daughter and her husband are dead, then it kind of switches. Their voices come and go. They're trying to like break into conversations and she's trying to push them away. But I guess it also does come at a moment where she has to admit that they are dead, and it has like a big moment for her. So I was going to say, it's a little weird that previously, because she is the narrator and unreliable, that they didn't just pop their voices in earlier. But I guess before, in her head, she was still believing. She said that she was separated. She was trying to convince people, you know, otherwise. So she was also convincing herself that maybe they were still alive, and that's why they only existed on phone calls. So that was, you know, Anyways, yeah. I was going to say I didn't like that, but now I guess thinking about it, I do.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a bunch of other people in the room, too, when she was forced to admit that they were gone. It wasn't like it was just her and herself being like, okay, I get it. They're gone. Mm-hmm. But on that note, we should take a little break.
That sounds good. We'll be right back.
All right. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
I hope you refilled your wine. I didn't. Oh, am I kidding? I haven't even finished half my glass. I don't even know who I am anymore. So on that note,
yes.
Okay, rather than talk about the rest of the plot, you guys should have seen it. We already talked a little bit about Anna being an unreliable narrator. I definitely saw an affair happening. I knew before anybody was dead that she had probably had some kind of an affair.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I couldn't get a read on was, so she was a child psychologist. She was separated from her husband. I didn't know if it was something with like a young patient. And by young patient, I mean like 17-year-old or something. Because some of the ways that she was talking about Ethan creeped me out.
Yeah, I could get that.
And maybe it's just because I work with kids that I'm like, oh no, that's skeevy. Oh no, you can't. Why are you talking like that? You can't talk like that. And I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but I don't know if you got that vibe at all. And maybe, again, listening to it, different perspective, perhaps. I think I was still reading this when I was driving to and from work. Aw, how cute is that? When we were still commuting places, out in the world. But yeah, no, that was my initial thought. I was like, okay, did she left her practice, is now an agoraphobe, and her husband wanted separation. Like, was she sleeping with a teenage patient? Mm. And I don't know why I went there, but I think it was just how she thought of Ethan in her head. Like, oh, he's so strong and he's so handsome. And it's like, that's uncomfortable. Like, I don't really ever see a 17-year-old and go like, look at how strong and handsome he is. Like, maybe if I was a grandparent,
yeah, I was gonna
I would
say,
think that of my like, grandchildren.
Yeah, she's not. Yeah, she's.
I couldn't get a read on it.
But also no. Like being a child psychologist. I don't know. Maybe she really didn't mean anything bad by it. You know. So
she probably didn't. I don't know. Maybe it was just there are so many things happening that it could have been just to mislead. But we have that murder. She's obsessed with the murder. Mm-hmm. Very much. I haven't seen Rear Window in years, but it's kind of a direct homage, mm-hmm. right? Like, he sees a murder happening. He has a broken leg and can't leave his house in Rear Window, I think. I don't know. It's been years since I've seen any Hitchcock film, if I'm being honest. But it doesn't surprise me that there are a bunch of references to old movies in this book because of how obsessed Anna is with the old movies. But she can't get anybody to believe her.
And, you know, that's, like, it is fair. I think the author does a good job of, like, really, without overemphasizing it, but emphasizing it just enough, how unreliable she is with the amount of medication she's taking, with the amount of alcohol she's drinking, with the fact that she's been kind of hallucinating these phone chats with her now-deceased husband and daughter. And then turning that around, saying she was watching this movie while she's saying that this murder took place. Like, of course this is all just, like, in her head.
And look at all of these empty bottles all over the place and all of these pills on the counter. And you almost never hear her eating anything that isn't, I don't know, like, garbage, I guess. Like, she's eating a bunch of, like, preheated stuff. She's not cooking for herself. And she's got, like, some relationships. Like, she's got a relationship with her physical therapist that seems marginally fine. She talks to her actual therapist. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know about you, but after her husband died, like, I was questioning how many of those conversations she was actually having.
Yeah.
Like, I believed the physical therapist because she's actually physically in the room and, like, slept over one night. Yeah. And, but it gets you questioning when you've got this drunk, unreliable narrator that is constantly on stuff all the time. Like, if I had a friend like that, I probably wouldn't believe them.
So, yeah, so and with, like, no other evidence or no other people there to view it, I think it was a well set up thing. But kind of moving ahead, because I have a lot of opinions on this, jumping forward, when or I guess what my first question before I jump too far ahead was, what did sure. you what did you think when she discovered the pictures of herself sleeping on her phone?
Okay, so on a personal level, oh my God, that's terrifying. Yeah. But I love that the first thing she thought, okay, so she got the email, she's looking into all of the details of evidence, because at that point in time, she's like, you know what? Nobody is believing me. I need to find as much evidence as I possibly can before I call the cop. I need to have all of this evidence. And the, what was it? The, not Yoohoo.
The,
what's their little greeting?
It's
not Yoohoo, is it?
No. Why am I blanking? Oh, they say it so many times.
I know. But the guess who Anna and all of that, super, super creepy, but it goes through, like, she's got it. She ultimately finds out that the picture is on her phone and she starts doubting herself. I think that was the first time where she's like, okay, there's reasonable doubt that I've seen any of this stuff, but like now I'm doing this to myself. Maybe all of this is me.
Yeah.
And I think that was the brilliance of our wonderful sociopath character. But what did you think when you read that? Like, how did that make you feel?
I think, so, okay, first, and then I'll answer. Did you know who committed the crime? Like, at what point did you know who the actual person was?
I got a little suspicious when the actual person, when he was at the house and like sobbing about telling the story, mm-hmm. and the lie story, not the real story. I was like, okay. I was like, this is a very little emotional boy. Mm-hmm. He's visiting a lot. It's kind of weird. But that I didn't get suspicious very like nearly early enough. Like I should have been suspicious a lot before that. What about you?
Also, I hated the fact that she gave him a key and was like, oh, yeah, come and use the downstairs, whatever.
Is she just trying to be, like, the cool neighbor or something? Like, but, like, that's an idiotic move.
Don't do that to an underage kid. Don't do that to any kid.
No. First of all, again, weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're an adult. This is a teenager. Don't give them a key to their house, even if they're acting all scared of their parents.
Yeah, don't do it. Not good. It probably, like, so going back to, like, the photo on the phone and whatever, mm-hmm. I did not suspect him around that time, but I was, because that she had seen him, like, through the window working on his computer and all this stuff, I was, all those little things, I was starting to be like, why is he such a major player in this story if he doesn't have a major role? And I think mm-hmm. with like the camera phone and she kept forgetting her password or the password kept changing. That's when I was kind of like, I think this has to be someone who's tech savvy and it has to be someone who is, you know, maybe I was even thinking of a younger generation. I knew Granny Lizzie wasn't Granny Lizzie from the start. So I was like, this is someone posing. And I think mm-hmm. it was around this time that I was thinking like, Ethan was definitely one of the suspects. He wasn't like, oh, he definitely did it, but he was definitely suspicious in my eyes at that point.
Well, and when I was looking back to it too, I was thinking about the fact that I know that this was on purpose, but that Ponch hated literally everyone besides Ethan. So if someone snuck into the house, like it had to be someone that the cat wouldn't have been tripped out about, because unless Anna was like really just passed out because of so many drugs and alcohol, the cat would have woken her up.
Yeah.
When my cats are weird and trip out in the middle of the night, I hear it.
Yeah.
But I'm not like drugged out when I go to sleep at nighttime.
Yeah.
But still, like you notice those things. So that kind of made me think about it. But she tried almost too hard. I say she. I actually don't know very much about the author. Is it a male or a female? I don't know. A male. He tried really hard to make Ethan empathetic, and it seemed like it was too hard. So that's why during that whole crying scene so if you are just like, you know what, screw that. I don't want to read the book. I just want to listen to these ladies talk about it. We ultimately find out that the Jane Russell that we meet at the beginning is Ethan's biological mom.
Not Jane Russell.
Not Jane Russell. So Ethan's biological mom who came to visit. And this is Anna's burning a lot of bridges. Mm-hmm. She like calls Ethan's dad's work and is like really investigating because of how much she suspects that he's the one that killed her, Jane Russell. But it turns out that is Catherine, mm-hmm. Who also consequently slept with David, because that's another thing that Anna freaks out about. She sees in David's room in the basement one of, quote, Jane Russell's earrings, and it's like, oh my God, he did it. Yeah. He totally did it. And she kind of loses her mind about it a little bit. All those, I don't know, the little, it gets distracting. It's kind of like so much extra noise in even the head of the reader when you're like, okay, so she thinks all of these people did it. Like, who actually did it? Oh my God.
Another creepy thing, though, is I don't like that he kept Anna's daughter's picture up when he was the tenant. I was just like,
yeah, that's weird too.
Yeah, that was a weird move. I'm like, I don't care if it's a happy kid and reminds you of simpler times or whatever. It's someone else's kid. Just like, take it down. Especially when you're having like sex with all these randos in your in your apartment. Just like, don't have this random kid up on your wall. But now, so okay, so we find out the quote unquote Jane Russell is the biological mom. We found out that she is a bit of a stalker.
Yeah, we find out that she's a bit of a stalker. She followed them to New York. So she kind of like was a drug deal. No, she was dating a drug dealer. She was a sex worker and also a drug addict when she had Ethan. And Ethan was given up for adoption when he was five and was like beaten and treated really, really terribly before, which doesn't say like, oh, that's why it's okay that he's a sociopath. Like, it's still really bad that he is the way that he is. But, you know, if you've listened to a lot of true crime podcasts, or if you know anything about serial killers, like, it seems like there's some event generally that happens in all of their childhoods that kind of dictates their choices later in life.
But what do you think of, like, his... So now we understand what's happening. We find out who the real Jane Russell is. We find out who the fake one is. We find out, you know, and then we get the reveal of Ethan just in Anna's apartment at night.
She's talking to herself and says, like, after her cat has been, like, injured, like, her cat has a broken leg. And she's like, oh, my God. Like, she says something about nighttime. And he's like, oh, well, I come in here all the time at night. And she's like, dun, dun, dun. Like, what's happening?
Yep, exactly. But I want to know, what do you think of his whole, like, monologue? Like, he has so much exposition that he then lays out. And for me, not that it's bad, because, like, it kind of gets explained away, like, oh, he's a sociopath and he likes to talk about this stuff type of thing. But at the same time, it is just, for me, another character in a book that is, like, the evil guy who's like, haha, and let me tell you my evil plan and exactly how I accomplished it. And you're like, all right, I guess I can
feel like that's a particular trope in these unreliable narrator drunk saw crime books. Because didn't that happen in... It didn't really happen in Sharp Objects. Like, she doesn't exactly tell us exactly what she did at the very end. But it definitely happened in Girl on the Train, where the ex-husband has this whole monologue thinking like, oh, well, I'm going to kill you too, so it's fine for me to tell you my dastardly plan.
It also happened in the first Harry Potter book when Voldemort's like, let me tell you everything.
Well, you know, Harry Potter, that drunk, unreliable narrator. You gotta watch out.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, so it was a bit tropey for me at that point, and I understand why you kind of I don't know if you have to do it, but I understand why authors choose to do it, because they want to explain how clever they were. You know, it's kind of that like compulsive need to be like, but look at all this stuff that I tricked you with. I need to explain every last detail to you, and you as a reader are like, yeah, this didn't have to be like the boy's monologue.
Well, so that's kind of exactly what it is. Like, maybe an author would not feel very good about either of us saying this, but it is kind of an ego thing for the author. Like, you know what? Let me just make my character say this, but don't you see how smart I am? Look at how clever I am. It's so cool. But I don't know, the characters definitely think that they're very clever.
And you know what? Kudos to the authors. You are very clever. I'm not an author. I've never written twists and turns before.
True.
So, you know, I'm giving you credit where credit's due. But at the same time, I don't always need the character monologue at the end to, like, spoon feed me what just happened. Because I think it clicks pretty fast what happened.
Right.
And that whole evil wahaha moment can kind of be shortened down a bit for me, in my humble opinion.
Did you ever suspect that Anna was just seeing things? Or did you always know, like, nah, something happened?
I think just because of the genre of the book, I always knew something happened. But trying to take it, it would have maybe been, maybe, hey, we've got a great book for you, AJ Finn, if you want to write another one exactly like this, but the ending is she imagined it all. Same exact book, but then here's the ending is a really big twist.
It was all in her head. Nothing ever happened. So I on the podcast, I feel more than you end up frustrated when we have little bow endings. And I didn't necessarily feel like this with the book, but I just want to know your thoughts on how it ended. So, were you satisfied? Did you want more? Did you want less? What did you think of the ending of the book?
You know, for the type of genre book it is, I was fine with it. You know, I think it's still a book I would recommend for someone like my mom who loved The Girl on the Train. It's kind of like one of those books for me when you know what you're getting into. I'm fine with some bow endings sometimes. I have a hard time with other where it's like the whole book was so profound and then they tied everything up in a bow and I'm like, it could have been a lot messier and I would have been fine with this. But in this instance, you know, I'm okay with it and I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those pesky kids or whatever type of ending, you know. Little Scooby-Doo ending. What about you?
Yeah, I think the only kind of issue that I have is how or why Ethan's parents, well, I guess just dad, because his mom didn't actually know anything, but choices on why he helped cover anything up. Because essentially we do find out that Ethan was the one that killed his biological mother, kind of didn't give a shit about it, and was like, you know, she was bothering me. I was done. It was not amusing anymore, so I'm done with that. In his big monologue, we learn that. Of course, while he's holding the same weapon up at, you know, Dr. Anna Fox.
bum, bum, bum.
But we find out that dad helps him and, like, buries the body. And this is after, you know, 15 years of maybe less, like 13 years of being a parent to this sociopathic child that is causing problems everywhere. The reason they have to move from Boston to New York is because he's been coveting the boss's wife and who knows what's going to happen with that. It just makes me think, like, yes, we do know that your parents have brought you to a bunch of psychologists, but maybe moving isn't enough. Maybe you need to do a little bit more. So again, I'm not a parent and I'm definitely not a parent of a sociopath, but that kind of was a little thing for me, like, oh, okay. So your parents aren't really enabling this for you, but they kind of are. Like,
well,
you're able to sneak
out
without them realizing it. I feel like if I had a kid that I knew had the propensity to be weird and crazy, then I would be a little more attentive.
And malicious.
Malicious, yes. Who was breaking limbs of little cats and probably, like, killing other small animals because, you know, that's what serial killers do, so I don't know, man.
Yeah. And, like, what did you think of the whole Anna kind of beating herself up? Like, of course, I'm a child psychiatrist. I honestly don't remember what I'm going to say, psychologist every time. But she's like, oh, I should have known better. I should have seen the signs and, like, all this stuff. And, it, you know, and then she kind of goes into this whole description of, like, what clinically, a sociopath you know, is, and she kind of comes from the doctor angle, and she's like, oh, I'm so dumb. But at the same time, I was just like, no, you're just drunk and on drugs and not really paying attention to that stuff. So you finally had someone to connect with. Yes, he was young and you were a bit creepy about it, but like, of course you missed all the signals.
Yeah, someone who didn't ask a million questions, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe is what she liked. Someone who just kind of let her be her. I don't know. All in all, it was a quick read, even though it was kind of long, mm-hmm. I guess. I think it was like 14 hours or something when I was listening to it. Kind of wish I was reading it.
Yeah, but it went fast.
Yeah, no. It didn't feel like it was very long. So, I don't. Where would you put it on a scale? So if you had, we've all read, we've all, the universe. The two of us have read Gone Girl. Yeah. We've read Sharp Objects. We have read Girl on the Train and Woman in the Window. Okay, all kind of twisty, all dark. Gone Girl's a little bit different, not quite in the same realm. But which of those, like, how would you rank them now that we've read all four? Which one did you like the best?
Enjoyability or?
Yeah, let's go enjoyability. We don't have to talk about prose or anything else. Characters.
So I, honestly, I think enjoyability for me, because I read Gone Girl first, I'm going to put that at the top. And it was the first kind of really, maybe not the first twisty one, but in this kind of ranking system, it was the first one I read. It was something different. I was engaged all the way through. So I think that would kind of be top for me. Then I would say I really enjoyed is such a weird word for these books, but Sharp Objects for me was something different. It was a really interesting look at someone, you know, suffering with something in a different way that you don't typically see, like with all the cutting and things like that. I think it was really creepy, all the children.
Oh, yeah.
So I like, it was engaging in that sense, like, you know, thinking about the half-sister. You know, she was just creepy all the way through, and then obviously ended up being the creepiest. But her mom, the poisoning, there's so much going
proxy.
On, like Munchausen.
I think I read that about the same time that I also watched the documentary, Mommy Dead and Dearest. I think I was like experiencing those at the same time.
So I think Gone Girl, Sharp Objects, and then I would say Girl on the Train, and then Woman in the Window, only because since I read Girl on the Train first, and it took me those first couple chapters and Woman in the Window to kind of get past the fact of there were so many similarities between the two. And then I was into it, but I think for me, that's kind of my ranking.
I agree. And I don't, it's interesting too, because it seems like Gone Girl and Woman in the Window and Girl on the Train are all like fairly lengthy books, whereas Sharp Object was like really succinct and kind of short. I want to say it was like 250 pages, maybe. It wasn't very long.
Definitely the shortest book.
But it felt like a different voice. I don't know. But I loved Gone Girl. Like when it got to like the nice little twist in the middle, I was like, oh, I'm here for this. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What's going to happen now? I literally hate every character. You don't often get engaging like characters that you like in these books. I think the only character that was fairly sympathetic in the book that we just read was the detective. Like, he was kind of the only person that was on Anna's side enough to be somewhat of an advocate, a skeptical advocate, but still an advocate. And probably knew all the details, knew that her husband and her daughter were dead, maybe even knew that she was having an affair with like her office partner.
Yeah.
But still
was very empathetic to the situation. Yeah. I felt like was very still professional in the sense that, you know, he didn't believe her, but he wasn't about to just like call her crazy and close the door.
I mean, the same with the physical therapist. Like, she was really helpful as well. So, but for the most part, in the four books that I just made you rank, not a whole lot of empathetic care. I mean, any kind of characters that you like at all, especially in Gone Girl. I didn't like anybody in Gone Girl, but I did really enjoy that book. Shall we
rate the book and the drink now? Any final thoughts?
It's just brain.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like I needed something else after this, but then I went straight to another murder mystery. So something's wrong with me. I've also, I said this before when we were chatting a bit. I have been reading so much. I've been doing almost like an audiobook and a physical book at the same time this entire self-isolation. And I think it's definitely escapism because I have so much work to do for teaching and for grad school that I think I'm just avoiding it. So I need to stop reading maybe for a bit.
No, I fully understand that for sure, because I find it so hard to just sit down and focus on, you know, studying anything, especially anything like STEM related. It's just my brain isn't here for it right now.
Yeah. Well, and at least like being a student helps me kind of get in the mindset of what my kids are kind of going through too. So I suppose that makes
it
a little
true.
Better for me as a teacher. All right. So do you want to do the beverage or the book?
Either one. I don't remember what we did last time. Oh, Stephen was on last time.
Stephen did the drink.
All right. Well, I'll do the book and you can do the drink.
Okie dokie.
What do we do first?
Normally we do the drink and then the book. I'm trying to figure out a number. Wow. Okay. I'm going to do, oh man, this is really, really hard. I'm going to do it out of, 2,000 megabytes. Isn't that how much 2 gigabytes is? I'm just thinking of camera storage.
Sure.
Out of 2,000 creepy pictures. I'm going to give...
Out of 2,000 creepy pictures.
I'm going to give my wine, I don't know, like 1,500 creepy pictures. That's like a C. It's fine. Okay. It's red wine. I am not going to go out and buy a case, probably, but we'll finish the bottle, and it tasted fine. Yeah. How about yours?
Hold on, I have to do my math like I normally do.
Oh, so you can figure out a grade?
What'd I say? 2,000. Where are you? Come on. There we go. Okay, let's try...
15 is a 75.
That's true. You picked an easy number. I don't know why I pulled out a calculator. my brain obviously just thought... I'm gonna give it a 1,400. Yeah, so I'm just going slightly lower, still a passing grade.
Yeah, still passing.
But, you know, I'm not going to make this a regular. I've not changed from my ways. I'll probably still be buying my Cab Sav and Syrahs and Tempranillos and stuff. But, hey, it's wine, and that's all you need, baby. So, yeah, 1,400 for me.
1,400, that sounds good. All right. Book.
I'm going to go with I have no significant
really
numbers.
Hard.
I'm just going to do 10. I'm just going to choose 10. And I'm going to go with 10 lavender candles.
Lavender candles.
Cuz I'm pretty sure that's the gift that quote unquote Jane Russell
gave. Ethan from Jane Russell, yeah. Creepy, creepy, creepy. All right, how many candles?
I think I'm gonna do maybe 7.9. So you just started burning one of the candles. 7.9 candles. A little bit of burn down. And because I think it's on that cusp where some people might rate it higher, like a B, and some people might downgrade it and call it a C. And I'm kind of on that cusp of, it was still an enjoyable read. There's still people I would recommend it to. I don't feel like it was a waste of my time at all. I like the twists and turns. I think it just took me a little longer to hop into this book as opposed to others. And I think it was maybe just a little too similar to something I've read fairly recently. So maybe that took out a bit of the enjoyability factor for me. But all in all, I still think it's a book that I would recommend to people.
I'd probably give it a 7.2. So that's basically like right before the candle like blows itself out because it's getting really down there. So that's like a solid C minus. I think that it was engaging and I did like it. And it made me think. And there are other books that I enjoyed more that did all of those things exactly. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't stop me from reading another book by this author. It's definitely not going to stop me from reading another book that has similar content, but it was fine. It was fine. It was good. Yeah. I liked it.
I agree.
There are definitely particular people that I would recommend read this. It would not be everybody.
For sure. I agree with that. I agree with all those sentiments. Yeah.
Well, what are we looking at next?
Coming up. I lost the page because I didn't know the author. Okay, coming up. This is actually by recommendation of you. We were just trying to think of something other than maybe agoraphobes or people trying to stay in the house all the time. Just something a little different. And I know we've read vampire books before. We read Dracula.
We read two vampire books.
Yeah, we've read them. And I don't know why we were on this kick. We were throwing around a few different books, like Christopher Moore's A Dirty Job and things like that. But I think we landed on Dead Until Dark by Charlaine Harris.
Yeah. I read the whole series, but I'm happy to read it again because it was like right out of high school. I read these books a really long time ago. But they are the books that inspired the True Blood series on HBO.
Yeah, and when I was living in Australia, I had a roommate, Sylvia, and she was obsessed with True Blood. So I've not read the books. I'm very much looking forward to, but I have seen True Blood. So I'm looking forward to reading that one. And then, not that it's Halloween or anything, but I guess we're continuing with this theme because we've been talking about reading it for a while, and I think we're going to finally do it. So coming up after that, I think we're going to do Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered.
By Georgia Hardstark and Karen Kilgareth.
Yeah. Yes. Their podcast is, of course, My Favorite Murder.
So, more murder.
That one. Yeah, more murder. I guess we're. But, I don't know. I'm looking forward to Dead Until Dark. I think that will be a fun one.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's a whole series. So, if you find, a book you like that's the beginning of a series, that's great. I actually wanted to share a book that I read this week. That's the first in a series. And it was recommended to me by a friend who is also a middle school teacher who said that it's like one of her favorite series she's ever read. And I was like, wow, that's hefty. Cause like you've read The Hunger Games and Harry Potter and all of these other kind of like YA series that are really important. But this is the first book in the Lunar Chronicles and it's called Cinder. So it's basically about a character named Cinder, very similar to Cinderella, except she's a cyborg. And it takes place in like a dystopian Earth in the year 100 and something. So you know that, the government has completely changed. I love it. Because I still do scholastic orders with my students. I'm sure that if you're listening, you guys don't remember. I was able with their points to get this entire series. So I feel like I'm trying to figure out when I can have a pilgrimage back to school to pick up the rest of the series from my classroom. Like, because I know I'm going to read it all. But all of the characters are kind of fairy tale derivatives. So it's like fairy tale meets dystopian future, cyborgs and robots and hovercrafts. I don't know. It's a good time. So if you're looking for a new series to read, that is one that I would recommend.
Sounds fun. I've just been reading Harry Potter just for funs and just for escapism. But that's a cool one. I want to definitely check that out. Always looking for book recommendations, thinking about maybe reading The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. At some point I would like to read the first of the series of Unfortunate Events again, because it has been,
I have all those at school and too. If I head to school, yeah, I'll pick them all up.
Yeah. I have no idea if it holds up. Like, I haven't read it since the first time I read it. So, I'd like to revisit that at some point if you're down.
Yeah, no, I'm totally down. I mean, honestly, we could probably read the first, like, three books because they're all so short. That would work just fine.
All right. We read the books. We have our next books. We're always taking suggestions. You can reach out to us on our Instagram and Twitter at @DPS_podcast.
You can email us at drunkpoetsociety_podcast@gmail.com.
You can always leave us a voice message if you want to be a real cool cat or kitten. Haha, pop culture reference to Tiger King.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Oh, Lord.
I was just going to see... Okay, this is going to be on camera. We probably don't, but... No, we have no new voice messages. So, guys, send us your voice messages. We'd love to hear from you. We don't even have to play it on the podcast if you don't want to, but we'd be happy to as well. Other than that, I hope you guys are doing all right. Make sure you're well stocked on wine if you're wine lovers like us. And if you're over 21 and drink responsibly.
Hey, in other countries, they don't have to be 21.
Ah, true. Just make sure you're legal age. You're drinking responsibly.
Yeah, be responsible.
You're of legal age and you're drinking responsibly. Yes. We never talk about this. I don't know why I'm giving the PSA at the end of this episode, but... Don't drink and drive. No one's really driving anywhere anyway, so unless you're an essential worker or something. So anyways, guys, just remember. I guess that's how
it works. There you go. That's a good ending.
I don't know. I'm so... Okay, really quickly before we end. The reason why I've been so distracted, I don't know if you've noticed on FaceTime, is because my feet are peeling crazy.
Oh, yeah. The foot mask you did.
So, So my sister... sent me these foot masks and she's like, oh, your feet are gonna peel like crazy and you're just gonna get all this dead skin off. And I put them on and then for like 5 days nothing was happening. I was like, yeah, you guys are
no it takes like a week, like, man.
Yes, day 7 and I look like I'm a lizard. Like, I was walking around, I'm like, there's dead skin cells all over this floor. And so while we were recording, I was just like pulling away really big chunks of dead skin. I hope you guys can really have a nice visual image in your mind's eye of how much skin I'm pulling
at least it wasn't like gross skin ripping ASMR.
So anyways, on that note, just remember that it's not drinking alone.
You have a book. Oh, great.
All right, guys, have a good one.